as I was finishing the last tape, I was saying that we were in Canada near Winnipeg shocking wheat late in the summer of 1924, and we looked out one morning, this was just after Labor Day, we looked out one morning and in the bright moonlight we could see frost all over the shocks of wheat and the bundles of wheat still laying to be shocked, and we decided that this was too early for us to face frost, and it was about time for us to get back to school, so we headed back for Oklahoma right then. We told the man that we had to get started back towards Oklahoma and start school, and I guess we'd better go. He paid us off and Canadian dollars. We didn't have quite enough, so he lacked a few dollars, so he gave us a case of Canadian Club whiskey, saying we could peddle that after we got back in the States and make a few extra dollars on it that way. We didn't know how we were going to get it back into the States, because we were just sure that it'd be confiscated at the customs going across. We got to the pulled up to the line, come to the customs place, and the fellow says, "What are you boys taking in back into the United States that you didn't have when you went into Canada?" We said, "A bunch of Canadian dollars that we're going to get changed after a bit, and a case of Canadian Club whiskey." He said, "Why, you lying young whelps, get on back, get on your way and quit holding us up. There's cars waiting out here. We've got to inspect and you. We know there's no kids dumb enough to say they've got a case of Canadian Club whiskey. And especially, you look like high school students and you know that you couldn't do that, and run us on." Before we arrived home, we did peddle the case of Canadian Club, bottle at a time, and made quite a few extra dollars. But we wanted to get rid of it before we got back into Oklahoma, because our folks would have been, had to gone and hid their faces in mortification if they'd ever known that we bootlegged whiskey and sold it in the United States from Canada. We got home, peddled our old Model T Ford, got a few dollars more for it than we'd paid for it originally, divided up the money, and prepared to start this high school. My mother decided not to teach again that year, so I lived at home, drove the old same Model T Ford I'd driven the other 3 years to high school, and a neighbor boy, two neighbor girls, and my brother, who was entering high school as a freshman that year, we all rode in the old Model T to high school. The school year was quite uneventful on the whole. My mother had relented this time and allowed me to play football, being that I was just a specialty fella, kick field goals and points after touchdown. Rules then were that you could only go into a game once a quarter, and if you came out during that quarter, you could not go back in again. So I would get in every time I made a touchdown and maybe stay in a few plays after that to give them a little more playing time. Our team won the Panhandle Conference Championship of Oklahoma that year, and in the championship game, I made all the points kicking a field goal every quarter. We won the game 12-0. Also played some basketball and run on the track teams again without any great outstanding success. About 3 weeks before graduation time, I was told to prepare a valedictorian address for graduation exercises, as I had the highest average grade, being 96.8 of any in the class. One thing happened during this time that I never have been able to understand and never had a good explanation why it happened, was that I didn't get elected to the National High School Honor Society for grades as I expected to get. There never was an explanation why, because they said it was due to my unusual schedule that I'd had, which I followed all the rules that they ever had in high school, and taking the courses, took all the requireds, and had good electives. And I was never given an explanation why I didn't get elected to the National High School Honor Society that year. Immediately after graduation, I was given by my state representative to Congress a appointment to either one of the military academies that I wanted to choose. I gave it considerable thought and decided I might try for Annapolis Naval Academy. We were living in the town of Oregon, Oklahoma, and there was a doctor, former Navy man, who lived across the street from me. He'd been a doctor in the Navy during World War I. I immediately started when I made my decision. I immediately decided to go across and get my physical exam, and I was assured that if I passed that physical exam, I'd have no trouble entering either one of the academies I wanted to. I started across the street to the doctor's house, got to the center of the street, stopped and gave some more thought, and decided that I didn't want to do that and make the Navy my career. So I went back home and told my mother that I decided not to accept either one of the appointments. So I notified the representative to Congress that I wasn't going to accept either one of the appointments, as I didn't want to make the Navy or the Army my way of life. My father was still operating the ranch for the old fellow that had a heart attack down on the Cimarron River. Part of his ranch was in Oklahoma and part of it was in Kansas. He lived in Oklahoma, but his address was in Kansas. And not long after that graduation, we moved down to the ranch in one of his houses there, and I went to work for ranches along the Cimarron River there that summer, and most of the time, however, was working on the ranch that my father was managing for the fella who was just about to get recuperated from his heart attack and ready to take over again. However, he kept my father on there as foreman of the ranch till late that year, actually in December. During August, they time was spent haying and taking care of the cattle. I had a good saddle, bridle, cowboy chaps, and boots that I had purchased during the time for over a matter of several years. And on the 31st of August, I came in after we'd put in a full day of putting up hay, and then I'd gone out and ridden till dark looking after some cattle, came in and unsaddled the horse, the bridle, and fed the horse, and I made a decision then that never would I get on a horse again unless it was one of the direst emergencies that ever happened to a person, which has never happened yet. Also, after I'd taken care of my horse, I had to milk a couple of cows, and after finishing milking those cows, I also said that I was never going to milk another cow as long as I lived, unless it was a very, very dire emergency. That hasn't happened either. These decisions had started to formulate in my mind when I was about 10 years old, as I had wanted a watch, a good pocket watch, and I had trying to figure some way of making money to earn that watch. My father told me that he would give me a nickel for every cow I milked until I had enough money to buy a watch I wanted, which was a 7-jewel Elgin advertised in some of the magazines. And the watch was in a celluloid case, an open face, and it cost $14.75. I milked cows at a nickel a cow, morning and night, and when I got my $14.75 to order the watch, the next morning I wasn't going to milk again, and Father hollered me out, said, "Now you can milk to earn your board." So all the rest of my life up until that time, I milked cows night and morning, and I developed a very poor rapport for cows. Also, during the same time, I'd had to ride horses quite a bit, and I also developed a very poor rapport with horses at the same time. So when I completed that day of August the 31st, 1925, I made those two decisions because I decided I was going to enter college and study some form of engineering. I was studying, tried to figure what college I wanted to go to. I had my choice of going to either Kansas University or Kansas State University, Oklahoma University, or Oklahoma A&M College, all of which I could go to without paying tuition, as most of the land my father was working on was in Oklahoma, but our address was in Kansas, so that neither place could charge me out-of-state tuition. During the third week in August, my brother had come down with acute appendicitis and had been rushed to Liberal, Kansas, which was the closest hospital, where they performed performed an emergency operation. At that time, after an appendicitis operation, you had to recuperate 3 weeks in bed before they'd even let you out of the bed. So, in my recollection, the last day of August was on Friday, and my mother was in Liberal with my brother, so my father and I went to Liberal over the weekend, which was about 44 or 45 miles away, and visited my brother in the hospital at Saturday and Sunday. And they came back home on Monday, which was Labor Day. I went down to Knowles to a boy that I'd been the first 2 years in high school with, that had rode with me most of the time. And he was going away to college too, so we decided we would be roommates wherever we went to college, and we would make our decision. We, after mulling it over, his father told him he could go wherever I wanted to go, and if we could, two of us could come to agreement of the minds, whatever it was, he would put the bill for this boy in college. I had enough saved up and in banks around the territory that I could pay for my first year in college in good shape at that time. He wasn't going to take an engineering course, so we mulled things over for 2 or 3 days, and studying all the catalogs and the cost, we finally decided on Oklahoma A&M College. One of the main reasons, I think, was that his mother's parents, his maternal grandmother and grandfather, lived in Stillwater, Oklahoma, the site of the Oklahoma A&M College. To the best of my recollection now, the Oklahoma A&M College started on the registration for freshmen started the 10th of September. So we got ready. I had already had all my stuff packed that I was going to take. We crawled on a train and in about 14 or 15 hours by having to change trains four times, we got to Stillwater, and his grandparents met us at the station and took us to their house at that time. We roomed and boarded with his grandparents first couple of weeks while we were fixing up a room that they had in the back. The room had a hot plate in there and a small refrigerator, ice box actually, and a bed. And so we fixed that up, and after a couple of weeks of rooming and boarding with them, we moved into that room and done our own cooking and living there. But it was too far to the college. It was over a mile that we had to go to get to the college from their house, and we didn't like that too well, and we didn't like the cooking deal too well either. So at the end of the first quarter, A&M was on the quarter system at that time, and the first quarter didn't end until just a few days before Christmas, and let out for Christmas vacation, and the second quarter didn't start until January the 2nd. So there was a new dormitory had just been built on the campus, and a room with two boys in it. Each get the room for $7 a month apiece. So we reserved a room in that dormitory before we, before the quarter was over, and we left to go home for the Christmas holidays. This boy I had with me there got extremely homesick during that first semester. I'd wake up in the night and hear him actually crying. He was so homesick. Long towards Christmas, when he realized we were going to go home for long, he kind of got over it, and I think got over it the rest of the time. I didn't know that he was such a homebody until we started home that Christmas for that Christmas vacation. School was going to be out at noon that Friday, and Christmas was going to be on Tuesday. So another fellow from Gate, Oklahoma, that we knew, was in some of the classes with this boy that was with me, come around and told us we could buy an old stripped-down Model T Ford for $25 to go home in if we wanted to chip in and do it. I went and looked at the old Model T Ford that had a built body on it and a top with side curtains. So I said, and the fellow that owned it said it used about a quart of oil every 100 miles and run around 25 miles to the gallon of gasoline. So we thought, well, that's a pretty good way of getting home and back to school, maybe. So we took him up and bought the thing for the $25, and each one of us, the other two boys put up $8, and I put up $9, and so school was out at noon. We ate lunch and crawled in it and started home. He wanted to stop in Enid, Oklahoma, which was about 60, 65 miles away from Stillwater, and spend the evening and night with his aunt that he had living there. So we got to Enid, and we put up in this boy from Knowles and myself, we put up in a little hotel, and he went to stay and spend the night with his aunt and uncle there in Enid. We left word for the fella at the desk that night, late when we, before we went to bed, we left word to for him to call us in the morning at 5 o'clock. We wanted to get an early start and get on home because we had about 120 miles yet to drive. And we'd like to get there before dark. So, 5 o'clock the next morning, he called us on the telephone and says, it's 5 o'clock and a bad blizzard blowing. When we'd gone to bed the night before, it was perfectly clear night, and the weather reporting not being what it was up to at the present time, we hadn't known that there was to be a storm come in. We went down and ate some breakfast and called this other fellow that owned the that was with, called him at his aunt's, and he said, well, he says, I think we'd better try to make it. He says, I'll be down by after you in about an hour. So we went down, we ate our breakfast, paid our bill at the hotel. He came by, and we started out north. We had to go straight north out of Enid for about 30 or 40 miles. And we were following U.S. Highway 64, which wasn't named at that time, but that's what it eventually turned into. It was about 30 miles of it was paved. It would be all the pavement we'd have. So we started out, and we got to, they said it was cold. It was down about 5 degrees above zero Fahrenheit. And so they said to keep from freezing up, we'd better put something over the front of this thing. So I told them I'd put too much over. I had the whole front covered up. I said, that's too much. No, it's cold enough, it won't hurt. Well, what happened was that the thing got a little warm and created a little overflow. And we hadn't covered the overflow up, and it, water coming out of it, froze off and froze the thing off, created pressure in there and blew out a hose and sprayed the whole top of the motor with water. And the coils of that Model T were on top of the motor, and they all got wet, so the thing wouldn't run. We were about 10 miles north of Enid at that time. Quite a strong north wind blowing, and as I say, 5 degrees above zero Fahrenheit. We finally, by hand, turned the old Model T around. Snow wasn't too deep yet. Got it turned around, and didn't know just how we were going to get back to Enid, but we knew we were going to have to get back there, get those coils dried out, one thing or another. So a fella came along a little bit, and I think he had a Dodge. Anyway, he stopped and said, what was the trouble? We told him, he said, well, I've got a tow cable here. He says, I'll pull you in to Enid. So we hooked on to the back of his car and front of ours. He took off. He said he never did get over 35 miles an hour, but that was awful fast for that little old stripped down Model T being pulled. And so he took us into the Dodge garage. Of course, this was on Saturday. They didn't have anybody working, no mechanics working that day. It just was open for sales and stuff. He took us in there, and we talked to people in the garage. They said, well, we haven't got anybody working. You can pull the thing in back there in the shop, dry your coils out, do whatever you want to do there. So got in there and got to looking, and lo and behold, the radius rods that was pulled out from off of the transmission, the ball and socket joint is pulled out of the socket, and just wobbling. So we fixed that, got the coils dried out late in the afternoon where they would work. And so They asked the fella keep the car there that night. He said yes. So he took us, this other boy took us out to his aunt's that night, and we spent the night out there with him and his aunt, uncle. And next morning, his cousin took us down to the garage. Snow was, it had snowed a good 12 to 14 inches, and there wasn't anything but tracks out down the road. You get on those tracks, you couldn't get out. All three of us had our old ROTC OD uniforms with us from the ROTC classes, with the old wrap spiral leggings. We put those on because they were going to be the warmest thing that we could have along to wear. We put those on.